Thank you. You're making the day so much more fun for me. When Jackson bailed out, I almost canceled. She leaned in and whispered. As you've seen, Bella can be a little bit of a handful. It's great to have some help. Amber felt her back go up. Was that what she was? Help? Wasn't the nanny available today? She couldn't resist asking. Daphne didn't seem to notice the jab. She shook her head absently. I'd already given her the day off since we had planned this. She smiled brightly at Amber and squeezed her hand. I'm so glad you came with us. This is the kind of thing I'd be doing with my sister if she were alive. Now I have a special friend to enjoy it with. That's funny. When we were looking at the beautiful animations in the store windows, I imagined how much Charlene would have loved it. Christmas was her favorite time of year. In fact, Amber's childhood Christmases had been mean and disappointing. But if Charlene had existed, she might have liked Christmas. Julie loved Christmas, too. I've never told this to anyone, but very late on Christmas Eve each year, I write a letter to Julie. What do you tell her? Amber asked. All that's happened in the last year. You know, like those Christmas letters that people send out. But these letters are different. I tell her what's in my heart and all about her nieces, how much she would have loved them and they her. It keeps me connected to her in a way I can't explain. Amber felt a brief stab of sympathy that quickly turned to envy. She had never felt that kind of love and affection for anyone in her family. She wondered what that would be like. She didn't know quite what to say.
Can we go to American Girl now?
Bella was standing, pulling on her coat, and Amber was grateful for the intrusion. They left the restaurant and grabbed a cab. Amber sat in front with the driver. The inside of the car smelled of old cheese, and she wanted to gag. But as soon as she rolled the window down, Queen Bella piped up from the back seat.
I'm cold.
Amber gritted her teeth and put it back up. When they arrived at 49th and 5th, the line going into the store went all the way around the block.
The line is so long, Tallulah said. Do we really have to wait?
Bella stomped her foot.
I need a new dress for my Bella doll. Can't you get us in ahead of them, Mommy, like you did at the restaurant?
Daphne shook her head. Afraid not, sweetie. She gave Tallulah a beseeching look. I did promise her. Tallulah looked like she wanted to cry. Amber had an inspiration.
Say, I noticed we passed a Barnes & Noble just a few blocks back. Why don't I take Tallulah there, and you and Bella can meet us when you finish?
Tallulah's eyes lit up.
Can we, Mom? Please?
Are you sure, Amber? Daphne asked. Was she ever?
Of course. This way they're both happy.
Super. Thanks, Amber. As she and Tallulah began to walk away, Daphne called out,
Amber, please stay with her in the store.
She bit back a sarcastic retort, like she'd really let the kid wander in Manhattan on her own.
I won't take my eyes off her.
As they headed south on Fifth Avenue, Amber seized the opportunity to get to know Tallulah better.
You're not into American Girl dolls? Not enough to stand in line for hours. I'd much rather look at books.
What kinds of things do you like? She shrugged.
Well, books. And I like to take pictures, but with old cameras and film.
Really? Why not digital?
The resolution is better, and I've found that...
Amber tuned out the rest of her explanation. She didn't care. All she needed to know was what she liked, not the three paragraphs of science behind it. Tallulah was like a little professor masquerading as a kid. Amber wondered if she had any friends at all.
Here we are. She followed Tallulah around the enormous store until they reached the mystery section, and she pulled out an armful of books. They found a cozy place to sit, and Amber grabbed a few books off the shelves as well. She noticed Tallulah holding a collection of Edgar Allan Poe stories. "Did you know Edgar Allan Poe was an orphan?" Amber asked. Tallulah looked up.
"What?"
Amber nodded.
"Yes, his parents died when he was 4. He was raised by a wealthy merchant."
Tallulah's eyes widened.
"Sadly, his new parents cut him out of their will, and he ended up very poor. Maybe he wasn't as nice to them as he was to his real parents."
Amber smiled inwardly at Tallulah's shocked expression. It was a good lesson for the kid to keep in mind. They spent the next 2 hours reading, Tallulah lost in her Poe book, ignoring Amber, Amber looking through a book on Formula One racing. She'd read that Jackson was an avid fan. When she'd had enough of that, she opened the Facebook app on her phone. Rage overcame her when she read the update. So, the bitch was pregnant. How could that have happened? The three of them smiling like idiots. Who was stupid enough to announce a pregnancy at only 8 weeks? Amber consoled herself with the thought that maybe she'd miscarry. She heard someone approach and looked up to see Daphne, laden with shopping bags, rushing toward them.
"There you are."
Daphne was out of breath, and Bella's hand was in hers as she ran to keep up with her mother.
"Jackson just called. He's going to meet us after all. We'll grab a cab and meet him at 65. We'll have dinner and then see the tree."
She smiled.
"Wait," Amber said, grabbing the arm of Daphne's coat. "I don't want to intrude on your family time."
In truth, she was surprised at how nervous she was at the prospect of meeting Jackson. The suddenness threw her off balance. She wanted advance warning, time to ready herself to meet the man she knew so much about.
"Don't be silly," Daphne gushed. "You won't be intruding. Now come on, he's waiting for us."
Tallulah got up immediately, putting all the books into a pile and picking them up. Daphne waved her hand.
"Leave them, sweetie. We need to get going."
13. He was waiting at the best table in the place. Its view was even more stunning than Amber had imagined. So was he, for that matter. The sex appeal practically oozed out of him. Drop-dead gorgeous. There was no other way to say it. And the impeccably tailored custom suit made him look like he'd just stepped off the set of a Bond movie. He stood as they approached, and when his dazzling blue eyes rested on Daphne, his smile widened, and he greeted her with a warm kiss on the lips. He was crazy about her, Amber realized with frustration. He crouched down, opening his arms, and the girls ran into them.
"Daddy!"
Bella grinned, looking happy for the first time all day.
"My girls, did you have a great day with Mommy?"
They both started chattering at once, and Daphne ushered them into their seats while she took the one next to Jackson. Amber sat in the remaining seat, across from him, next to Bella.
"Jackson, this is Amber. I told you about her. She's come to my rescue on the gala committee."
"Very nice to meet you, Amber. I understand you've been a great help."
Her eyes were drawn to the delectable dimple that appeared when he smiled. If he wondered what she was doing having dinner with them, he at least had the good grace not to show it. They ordered cocktails for themselves and appetizers for the kids, and after a little while Amber blended into the background and sat observing them.
"So, tell me about your day," Jackson said. "What was the highlight?"
"Well, I got 2 new dresses for my Bella doll, a stable set, and a tutu to match mine, so she can come to ballet with me."
"How about you, Lou?"
"I liked Alice's teacup,"
It was cool. Then Amber took me to Barnes & Noble.
He shook his head. My little bibliophile. You come to the city, and that's where you go? We have one right around the corner, he said, not unkindly.
Yeah, but it's not huge like here. Besides, we come here all the time. No big deal.
Amber swallowed her anger at Tallulah's sense of entitlement. No big deal indeed. She'd like to ship her off to some rural location for a few years and let her see how the rest of America lived. Jackson turned to Daphne, resting his hand briefly on her cheek.
And you, my darling, what was your highlight?
Getting the call from you. Amber wanted to vomit. Were they for real? She took a long swallow from her wine glass. No need to pace herself. He could afford to keep it coming. When he finally tore his eyes off his gorgeous wife, Jackson glanced at Amber.
Are you from Connecticut, Amber?
No, Nebraska.
He looked surprised.
What brought you east?
I wanted to expand my horizons. A friend of mine moved to Connecticut and invited me to room with her, she said, then took another sip of wine. I fell in love with the coastline right away, and being so close to New York.
How long have you been here?
Was he really interested or just being polite? She couldn't tell. Daphne answered before she could.
About a year, right?
She smiled at her.
She's in real estate, too. Works in the commercial division of Rollins Realty.
How did you meet again?
I told you, it was quite by accident, Daphne said.
He was still looking at Amber, and she suddenly felt as though she was being interrogated.
Hello? This is boring,
Bella sang out. Amber was grateful to the little wretch for distracting him. Jackson turned his attention to her.
Bella, we don't interrupt adults when they're talking.
His voice was firm. Thank God one of them has a backbone, Amber thought. Bella stuck her tongue out at him. Tallulah gasped and looked at Jackson, as did Daphne. It felt like time had stopped as everyone waited to see his reaction. He burst out laughing.
I think someone's had too long a day.
Everyone at the table seemed to exhale. Bella pushed her chair back and ran over to him, burying her head in his chest.
I'm sorry.
He stroked her blonde curls.
Thank you. Now you're going to behave like a lady, right?
She nodded and skipped back to her seat. Score another point for the little hooligan, Amber thought. Who knew that the biggest thorn in her side was going to be this little pint-sized gremlin?
How about another surprise? He said.
What?
The girls asked in unison.
How about we go see the Christmas show at Radio City and then spend the night here?
The girls' voices rose in excitement, but Daphne put her arm on Jackson's and said,
Sweetheart, I hadn't planned to stay the night, and I'm sure Amber wants to get home.
In fact, Amber was thrilled to stay. Her curiosity about the parish's apartment outweighed any desire to get back home. Jackson glanced at Amber as if she were a pesky problem to be solved.
Tomorrow's Sunday. What's the big deal? She can borrow a change of clothes.
He looked right at Amber.
Is that a problem for you?
Amber was dancing on the inside, but she gave him a sober and appreciative look.
That would be fine with me. I'd hate to disappoint Bella and Tallulah. They seem really excited to stay.
He smiled and squeezed Daphne's arm.
See? It's fine. We'll have a great time.
Daphne shrugged, resigned to the change in plans. They went into the theater and watched Santa and the Rockettes for the next hour and a half. Amber thought the show was moronic, but the girls loved every minute. When they came out, it was snowing, and the city looked like a winter wonderland,
with white lights twinkling on the bare tree branches, now covered in the magic powder. Amber looked around in awe. She'd never seen New York this late at night. It was a sight to behold, the lights making everything shimmer and glow. Jackson took the phone from his pocket, pulled off his leather glove, and, hitting a key, brought it to his ear and said,
"Send the driver to the front entrance of Radio City."
When the black limousine with dark windows pulled up, Amber craned her neck to see what celebrity might step out. But as a tall, uniformed chauffeur got out and opened the back door, she realized that the limo was empty and that it was there for them. Now she felt like the celebrity. She'd never been in a limousine. She noticed that Daphne and the girls didn't look the least bit fazed. Jackson took Daphne's hand and guided her in first. Then he gave Bella and Tallulah a playful shove, and they followed after their mother. He gestured to indicate that Amber should enter next, but he barely looked at her. The car was large enough for the two women and two children to sit four across. Jackson spread out on the seat opposite them, his arm draped across the back of the seat, and his legs spread wide. Amber tried with difficulty to keep her eyes off him. He was positively brimming with power and masculinity. Bella was leaning against her mother, almost asleep, when Tallulah said,
"Are we going right to the apartment, Daddy?"
"Yes, I..."
But before he got another word out, Bella shot up, now wide awake.
"No, no, no, not the apartment. I want to go where Eloise is. I want to sleep at the plaza."
"We can't do that, sweetheart," Daphne had said. "We don't have a reservation. We'll do that another time." Bella wasn't having it.
"Daddy, please. I'll be the first one in my class to stay where Eloise lives. Everyone will be so jealous. Please, please, please."
At first, Amber had wanted to grab the little whiner and wring her selfish little neck. But there was something in her that Amber recognized, something that made her see how she could turn her into an ally instead of an enemy. And anyway, who cared whether they stayed at the apartment or the plaza? Either one was a treat for Amber. The next morning, Amber rolled over, pulling the duvet closer around her until it touched her chin. She sighed and wriggled her body against the silky sheet, feeling its softness caress her. She'd never slept in such a sumptuously comfortable bed. In the one next to hers, Tallulah stirred. The suite had only two bedrooms. Bella had bunked with her parents, and though Tallulah hadn't looked too happy about sharing a room with Amber, she'd obliged. Amber threw off the covers, rose, and went to the window. The grand penthouse suite looked out over Central Park, and New York lay before her as if for the taking. She scanned the beautiful room, with its tall ceilings and elegant furnishings. The suite was fit for royalty, larger than the average house. Jackson had succumbed to Bella's request, of course, had even sent his chauffeur to get clothes for everyone from the apartment. Unbelievable how easy it was for the rich, how unfairly easy. She slipped off the pajamas Daphne had lent her and showered and dressed in the clothes she'd also given her last night, a pair of blue wool slacks and a white cashmere sweater. The material felt divine against her clean skin. She looked in the mirror, admiring the perfect cut and clean lines. When she glanced at the bed, she saw that Tallulah still slept, so she tiptoed quietly out of the room. Bella was already up, sitting on the green tufted sofa with a book in her hands. She looked up briefly as Amber entered, said nothing, and gave her attention back to the book. Amber sat on a chair opposite the sofa and picked up a magazine from the coffee table, not saying a word and pretending to read. They stayed that way for the next 10 minutes, silent, uncommunicative. Finally, Bella closed her book and stared at Amber.
Why didn't you go home last night? This was supposed to be a family night.
Amber thought for a moment.
Well, Bella, to tell you the truth, I knew everyone at my office would be envious if they knew I got to stay at the plaza and have breakfast with Eloise.
She paused for effect.
I guess I wasn't thinking about the family thing. You're right about that. I should have gone home. I'm really sorry.
Bella tilted her head and gave Amber a suspicious look.
Your friends know about Eloise? But you're a grown-up. Why do you care about Eloise?
My mother read all the Eloise books to me when I was little.
This was total bullshit. Her mother had never read anything to her. If Amber hadn't spent all her spare time in the library, she'd be illiterate now.
Why didn't your mom take you to the plaza when you were little?
We lived far away from New York. Have you ever heard of Nebraska?
Bella rolled her eyes.
Of course I've heard of Nebraska. I know all 50 states.
This brat was going to take more than camaraderie and kid gloves.
Well, that's where I grew up, and we didn't have enough money to come to New York. So, there you have it. But I do want to thank you for making one of my dreams come true. I'm going to let everyone at the office know that it was all because of you.
Bella's face was inscrutable, and before she answered, Jackson and Daphne came into the room.
Good morning.
Daphne's voice was cheery.
Where's Tallulah? It's time for breakfast. Is she up yet?
I'll go see, Amber said. Tallulah was up and almost finished dressing when Amber knocked and went in.
Good morning, she said to her. Your mom asked me to check on you. I think they're ready to go down to breakfast.
Tallulah turned to look at her.
Okay, I'm ready.
And they walked together to the living room where the others waited.
Did you girls sleep well?
Jackson's voice boomed as they headed to the elevator. They all spoke at once, and as the elevator descended, he looked at Bella and said,
We're going to have breakfast with Eloise in the Palm Court.
Bella smiled and looked at Amber.
We've been wanting to do that for a long time, she said.
Maybe she finally had this little hellion in her pocket, Amber thought. Now it was time to work on Jackson. 14. Amber and Daphne sat beside each other at the parish dining room table, which was covered in paper, including the list of attendees and a ballroom diagram of the table arrangements. Since almost all of these people were unknown to Amber, Daphne was dictating the seating for each table while Amber dutifully entered all the information into an Excel file. There was a lull as Daphne studied the names before her, and Amber took the opportunity to gaze around the room and out the long bank of floor-to-ceiling windows that looked out to the sea. The room could comfortably seat 16 for dinner, but it still had a feeling of intimacy. The walls were a muted gold, a perfect backdrop for the magnificent oils of sailboats and seascapes in gilded frames. She could imagine the formal dinner parties they must have here, with elegant place settings of china, crystal, fine silver, and table linens of the highest quality. She was pretty certain that there was not a paper napkin to be found anywhere in the house.
Sorry to take so long, Amber. I think I finally have table 9 figured out, Daphne said.
No problem. I've been admiring this beautiful room.
It's lovely, isn't it? Jackson owned the house before we were married, so I haven't done very much to change things. Just the sunroom, really.
She looked around and shrugged.
Everything was already perfect.
Gosh, how wonderful.
Daphne gave her an odd look that passed quickly, too quickly for Amber to identify it.
Well, I think we're finished with the seating. I'll send the list to the printer to make up the table cards, Daphne said, rising from her chair.
I can't thank you enough.
This would have taken forever without your help. Oh, you're welcome. I'm happy to do it.
Daphne looked at her watch and then back at Amber. I don't have to pick up the girls from tennis for another hour. How about a cup of tea and a bite to eat? Do you have time?
That would be great.
She followed Daphne out of the dining room.
Could I use the restroom?
Of course. They walked a bit farther, and Daphne indicated a door on the left. When you come out, turn right and keep walking to the kitchen. I'll put the tea on. Amber entered the first floor powder room and was stunned. Every room in the house offered a staggering reminder of Jackson Parrish's great wealth. With its polished black walls and silver picture frame wainscoting, it was the epitome of quiet opulence. A waterfall slab of marble was the focus of the room, and on top of it sat a marble vessel sink. Amber looked around in wonder once again. Everything original, custom-made. What would it be like to have a custom-made life, she wondered. She washed her hands and took one last look in the mirror, a tall, beveled piece of glass set in a frame that looked like rippled silver leaves. As she walked the length of the corridor to the kitchen, she slowed to look at the art on the walls. Some she recognized from her exhaustive reading and mech courses, a Sisley and a stunning Boudin. If these were the real thing, and they probably were, the paintings alone were worth a small fortune. And here they were, hanging in a little trafficked hallway. As she entered the kitchen, she saw that tea and a plate of fruit sat waiting on the island.
Mug or cup?
Daphne asked, standing in front of an open cabinet door. The shelves of the cabinet looked as if they could have been a display for a luxury kitchen showroom. Amber imagined someone using a ruler to measure an exact distance between each cup and glass. Everything lined up perfectly, and everything matched. It was disconcerting in some strange way, and she found herself mutely staring, mesmerized by the symmetry.
Amber? Daphne said.
Oh, mug, please.
She sat on one of the cushioned stools.
Do you take milk?
Yes, please, Amber said.
Daphne swung the refrigerator door open, and Amber stared again. The contents were lined up with military precision, the tallest at the rear and all labels facing front. The absolute precision of Daphne's home was off-putting. It felt to Amber like more than a desire for a neat home, and more like an obsession, a compulsion. She remembered Sally's account of Daphne's time in a sanitarium after Tallulah's birth. Perhaps there had been more going on than just postpartum depression, she thought. Daphne sat opposite Amber and poured their tea.
So, we have just 2 weeks before the big night. You've been amazing. I felt such a wonderful synergy with you. We both have so much of our hearts invested in this.
I've loved every minute of it. I can't wait until the fundraiser. It's going to be a huge success.
Daphne took a sip of tea and placed the mug on the counter between her hands. Looking at Amber, she said,
I'd like to do something to show my appreciation for all your hard work.
Amber tilted her head and gave Daphne a questioning look.
I hope you'll let me buy you a dress for the fundraiser, Daphne said.
Amber had hoped this was going to happen, but she had to play it carefully.
Oh, no, she said. I couldn't let you do that. Please, I'd really love to. It's my way of saying thank you.
I don't know. It feels like you're paying me, and I didn't work on this to get paid. I wanted to do it.
Amber smiled inwardly at her brilliant show of humility.
You mustn't think of it as payment. Think of it as gratitude for your immense help and support.
Daphne said as she pushed back a blonde wave, her diamond ring flashing brightly.
I don't know. I feel sort of funny having you spend money on me.
Well, Daphne said, and paused. How would you feel about borrowing something of mine, then? Amber could have kicked herself for protesting too much, but she guessed borrowing a dress was the next best thing.
Gee, I hadn't thought of that. I would feel better if you weren't spending your money.
As if this woman didn't have millions to burn. Great. Daphne stood up from the stool. Come upstairs with me, and we'll look through my closet. They climbed the stairs together, and Amber admired the Dutch masters on the wall.
You have magnificent artwork. I could spend hours looking at it.
You're more than welcome to. Are you interested in art? Jackson is absolutely passionate about it, Daphne said as they reached the landing.
Well, I'm no art expert, but I do love museums, Amber replied.
Jackson, too. He's a board member of the Bishop's Harbor Art Center. Here we are, Daphne said, leading her into a large room. Given its size, it could hardly be called a walk-in closet, filled with racks of clothing lined up in perfect, parallel rows. Every piece of clothing was in a transparent garment bag, and two walls were lined with shelves that held shoes of all styles, arranged by color. Built-in drawers on a third wall held sweaters, one each, with a small see-through panel to identify them. At one end of the room stood a three-way mirror and a pedestal. The lighting was bright but flattering, without the harshness of department store fitting rooms.
Wow!
Amber couldn't help herself from remarking.
This is something.
Daphne waved her hand dismissively.
We attend a lot of functions. I used to go shopping for each one, and Jackson said I was wasting too much time. He started having things sent to the house for me to look at.
She was leading Amber to a rack near the back when suddenly a young woman came walking into the room.
Madame, she said, les filles, it is time to pick them up, no?
Oh my gosh, you're right, Sabine, she exclaimed, looking at her watch again. I've got to go. I promised the girls I would get them today. Why don't you just look through these dresses till I get back? I won't be long.
She patted Amber's arm.
Oh, and Amber, this is Sabine, our nanny.
She rushed out of the room.
Nice to meet you, Sabine, Amber said.
Sabine, reserved, gave a small nod of her head, and in thickly accented English responded,
My pleasure, miss.
Mrs. Parrish told me you'd been hired to teach French to the girls. Do you enjoy working here?
Sabine's eyes softened a moment before she regained her austere composure.
Very much. Now you would please excuse me.
Amber watched as she walked away.
So she was French. Big deal. She was still just a nanny.
But, Amber thought, Daphne's friends would all think it was so grand, not the usual Spanish-speaking nanny, but one who would teach her daughters French. Amber looked around the room in wonder. Daphne's closet, indeed. This was more like having an exclusive department store at your disposal. She sauntered, slowly examining the rack upon rack of clothes, all meticulously sorted by color and type. The shoes were lined up with the same fastidiousness as the china in the kitchen cabinets. Even the spacing between garments was uniform. When she got to the three-way mirror, she noticed two comfortable club chairs on either side, apparently meant for Jackson or whoever was nodding approval as Daphne modeled her choices. On the rack Daphne had indicated, she began to look through the dresses. Dior, Chanel, Wu, McQueen. The names went on and on. This wasn't some chain department store sending clothes for Daphne to look at. These were couture houses making their designs available to a moneyed client. It boggled her mind. And Daphne was so casual about all of it. The luxury, the fine art, the closet full of designer suits, dresses, and shoes. Amber unzipped one of the bags and brought out a turquoise Versace evening dress. She carried it to the three-way mirror and stepped onto the pedestal, holding the beautiful dress against her body and staring at her reflection. Even Mrs. Lockwood had never brought anything remotely like this to be dry-cleaned. Amber hung the dress up and, when she turned away, suddenly noticed a door at the far end of the room. She moved toward it and paused with her hand on the knob only a moment before opening it. Before her was a sumptuous space that was a dazzling mix of luxury and comfort. She walked around slowly, her fingers brushing the yellow silk wallpaper. A white velvet chaise longue sat in a corner of the room, and the light from the Palladian window threw dazzling prisms of color on the walls as it pierced the crystals that hung from the large chandelier. She reclined onto the chaise, looking at the picture on the opposite wall, the only piece of art in the room, and felt herself drawn into the peaceful scene of trees and sky. Her shoulders relaxed, and she surrendered to the stillness and calm of this special place. She closed her eyes and, imagining this was her room, stayed that way for a while. When she finally rose, she examined the space more closely, the delicate table with photographs of a young Daphne and her sister Julie. She recognized the slight girl with long, dark hair and beautiful almond-shaped eyes from photographs she'd seen throughout the house. She moved to the front of an antique armoire with an abundance of small drawers. Reaching over, she opened one of them. Some lacy underwear. Another with exotic soaps. More of the same in the other drawers, all meticulously folded and placed. She opened the cabinet and found mounds of plush bath towels. She was about to close the door when she noticed a rosewood box toward the back. Amber took it in her hand, undid the catch, and opened it. Inside, nestled on rich green velvet, sat a small, pearl-handled pistol. She gently lifted it from the box and saw etched on the barrel the initials YMB. What was this gun doing here? And who was YMB? Amber wasn't sure how long she had been standing there when she heard the sound of voices and doors opening and closing. She quickly replaced the gun, took one more glance around the room to make sure she hadn't disturbed anything, and left. As she re-entered the clothing room, the children came bounding in, Daphne close behind them. "Hi, we're back. Sorry we were so long. Bella forgot her painting, so we went back to get it," Daphne said. "It's fine," Amber said. "The dresses are all so beautiful. I can't decide." Bella frowned and whispered to her mother, "What's she doing here?" "Sorry," Daphne said to Amber, and then took Bella's hand. "We're finding a dress for Amber to borrow for the fundraiser. Why don't you and Tallulah help her? Wouldn't that be fun?" "All right," Tallulah said with a smile, but Bella looked at Amber with undisguised hostility, turned on her heel, and stalked out of the room. "Don't let her upset you. She just doesn't know you well enough yet. It takes Bella a while to warm up." Amber nodded. "She'd better get used to me," she thought. "I'm going to be around a long, long time." 15. Amber was pissed. It was December 24th, and Rollins was staying open until 2 o'clock. What kind of idiots looked at houses on Christmas Eve? Why weren't they at home, wrapping their big-ticket presents and decorating their 12-foot trees? But they probably didn't do all those things themselves, she reflected. That's what people like Amber were for. Around noon, Jenna stood in the doorway of Amber's office.
"Hey, Amber, can I come in?"
"What is it?" "Just what I need now," she thought peevishly. Jenna walked in with a large wrapped package in her hand and placed it on Amber's desk.
Merry Christmas.
Amber glanced at the gift and then at Jenna. She hadn't even thought to buy a present for Jenna and was discomfited by her gesture.
Open it,
Jenna said. Amber picked it up and tore off the paper, then took the lid off the box. Inside was a glorious assortment of Christmas cookies, each one more delicate and delicious-looking than the last.
Did you make these?
Jenna clapped her hands together.
Yes, me and my mom do it every year. She's a spectacular baker. Do you like them?
I do. Thank you so much, Jenna. It was really nice of you. Amber paused a moment. I'm so sorry, but I didn't get you anything.
It's okay, Amber. I didn't make them so you'd get me a gift. It's just something my mom and me love doing. I give them to everyone in the office. I hope you enjoy them. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Amber slept late on Christmas morning. When she awoke, the sky was blue, the sun was shining, and only an inch of snow had fallen. She took a long, hot shower and, after wrapping her terry cloth robe around her, made a strong pot of coffee. She took her mug back into the bathroom and began to blow dry her wet hair into soft waves, plain but classic. She applied a little blush, a dab of very discreet eyeshadow, and some mascara. She stepped back from the mirror to examine the finished product. She looked youthful and fresh, but without a trace of sexiness. Daphne had asked her to come over around 2 o'clock, so after she finished a cup of yogurt, she sat down to read the Odyssey, which she'd borrowed from the library last week. Before she knew it, it was time to dress and gather everything up. Hanging on the closet door was the outfit she'd chosen, gray wool slacks and a white and gray turtleneck sweater, small pearl studs in her ears, not real, of course, but who cared? A simple gold-colored bangle on her left wrist, and only her sapphire ring on her finger. She wanted to look pure and virginal. She took one last look in the full-length mirror, nodded approval at her image, and swept the presents into a large shopping bag. 15 minutes later, she pulled into the open gates and parked her car in the circular driveway. Grabbing the bag of presents, she strode to the door and rang the bell. She saw Daphne coming down the hall, Bella right behind her.
"Welcome. Merry Christmas. I'm so glad you could come,"
Daphne said, flinging open the door and embracing her.
"Merry Christmas to you. Thank you so much for letting me share this day with you and your family," Amber said.
"Oh, it's our pleasure," Daphne said as she shut the door. Bella was dancing around next to Daphne like a jumping bean.
"Hi, Bella. Merry Christmas."
Amber gave her a big, fake smile.
"Do you have a present for me?"
Bella asked.
"Oh, Bella, you didn't even say hello. That was very rude," Daphne scolded. "Of course I brought you a present. How could I not give one of my favorite girls a present?"
"Goody! Can I have it now?"
"Bella, Amber hasn't even taken her coat off."
She gave her daughter a little shove. "Let me have your coat, Amber, and let's all go into the living room." Bella looked as if she was going to protest, but did as she was told. Jackson and Tallulah looked up from the dollhouse they were furnishing as Amber, Daphne, and Bella entered the room.
"Merry Christmas, Amber. Welcome,"
Jackson said with a warmth that indeed made her feel welcome.
"Thank you for inviting me. My whole family is back in Nebraska, and I would have been alone today. You don't know how much I appreciate it."
"No one should be alone on Christmas. We're glad you're here."
Amber thanked him again and then turned to Tallulah.
"Hi, Tallulah. Merry Christmas. What a cool dollhouse. Would you like to come see it?" she asked.
These kids were like night and day. She didn't like children, but at least Tallulah had manners, not like the little animal who thought the sun and the moon revolved around her. Amber went and sat down next to Tallulah in front of the dollhouse. She had never seen anything like it, even in photographs. What she and her sisters would have given for a toy like this, with all the fabulous furnishings and dolls to go with it. It was enormous, with three stories, real wood floors, tile bathrooms, electric chandeliers that actually worked, and beautiful paintings on the walls. As she looked closer, she realized it was a replica of the actual house they lived in. It had to have been custom-made. What must that have cost?
"How about a glass of eggnog, Amber?" Daphne asked. "I'd love one, thank you."
She continued to watch as Tallulah carefully placed sofas, tables, and chairs in the house. Bella was on the other side of the room, busy with her iPad. As she sat there, Amber took in all of the presents sitting open under the tree. They were piled high upon one another, tissue and ribbon mingled in the mix, and spilled far into the room. She thought back to the miserly Christmases of her youth, and felt keenly sad. She and her sisters had always gotten presents that were utilitarian, like underwear or socks, never a gift that was a luxury, or even just a fun toy to play with. Even their stockings had been filled with useful or edible things, like the huge orange at the bottom to take up room, pencils and erasers for school, and sometimes a little puzzle that would become tiresome after one day. The display in the parish's living room left her speechless. She saw what looked like silk lingerie peeking out from one of the boxes, and several smaller boxes that must have contained more jewelry for Daphne. Tallulah's presents were stacked in a neat pile. Bella's, on the other hand, were haphazardly spread out over a large part of the room, and once she put down the iPad, she went from one to another in quick order. The one thing missing from this scene, Amber thought to herself, was Daphne's mother. Why wouldn't the girl's grandmother, a widow living only a car ride away, not be invited to spend Christmas with her only daughter and granddaughters? It seemed to her that the value placed on lavish presents was way above that of family. Daphne came back into the living room with three glasses of eggnog and put them on the mahogany butler's table between the two large sofas. "Amber, come sit with me," she said, and patted the cushion next to her. "Will you have some time off before the new year?"
"I do, actually. That's the advantage of working on the commercial side of real estate."
She took a sip of eggnog.
"Are you and Jackson going away over the holiday?"
"As a matter of fact, we leave on the 28th for St. Bart's. We usually leave the day after Christmas, but Meredith is having a surprise 50th birthday party for Rand the day after tomorrow, so we push the date."
"How nice," Amber said, seething inside.
She would be spending the rest of the holidays in her cheerless apartment, trying to stay warm while they basked in the sun. She rose from the sofa, hoping her expression hadn't betrayed her jealousy.
"I've brought some presents. Let me get them," she said.
Bella jumped up from the floor and ran over.
"Can I see my present? Can I? Can I?"
Amber noticed Jackson smiling as he watched Bella jump around with anticipation.
"Here you go, Bella."
Amber handed her the wrapped book set. Luckily, she had also gotten her a sparkly necklace and bracelet to match. Bella loved shiny things. She ripped greedily into the paper, looked briefly at the books, and then opened the smaller box.
"Oh, pretty.
How lovely. Let me help you put on the necklace," Daphne said. "Here, Tallulah, this one is for you."
She slowly unwrapped the package.
"Thank you, Amber. I love this book."
Bella, finished with the necklace and bracelet, began looking through the books Amber had given her, and stomped her foot.
"No fair. I already have this hidden treasure.
Jackson swept her up in his arms and tried to console her.
It's okay, baby. We'll take it back to the store and get one you don't have, okay?
Okay,
she whined and put her head on his shoulder. Daphne retrieved a wrapped package from under the Christmas tree and handed it to Amber.
This is for you. I hope you like it.
Amber untied the red velvet ribbon and gently tore off the black and gold paper. The small box held an elegant gold chain with a single pearl. It was beautiful. For a moment, Amber was overwhelmed. She'd never owned something so lovely.
Oh, Daphne, thank you. I love it. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
I have something for you, too.
Daphne unwrapped the box and then held up the bracelet. When she read Julie's name on the charm, her eyes filled with tears. She slipped the bangle onto her wrist.
What a wonderful gift. I'll wear it always. Thank you.
Amber held her arm out in front of her.
I have one, too. We'll have our sisters with us all the time.
Yes.
Daphne choked up as she pulled Amber to her, hugging her tightly.
Let me see, Mommy.
Bella ran to the sofa and flopped onto her mother's lap.
You see, a pretty bracelet with Aunt Julie's name engraved on it. Isn't it lovely?
Uh-huh. Can I wear it?
Maybe later, okay?
No, now.
Well, just for a few minutes, and then Mommy wants it back.
Daphne took the bracelet off and handed it to her. Bella pushed her fist through it, but the bracelet was too big to stay on her tiny wrist, and she passed it back to Daphne.
Here, Mommy. I don't like it. You have it.
Amber was furious that this unpleasant child had interrupted what should have been a serious bonding moment, but she picked up the other gift and held it out to Daphne.
One more that I thought you might like.
Amber, really, this is too much. You've gone overboard. No, Amber thought. Overboard is what is surrounding us in this room full of lavish presents amid discarded ribbons and wrappings.
It's nothing, Daph. Just a little thing.
Daphne opened the box and pulled out the turtle wrapped in tissue paper. As she unwound the paper and the crystal turtle came into view, she lost her grip and dropped it onto the floor. Amber reached down to pick it up, glad to see that it hadn't broken.
Good.
She placed it on the coffee table. Still intact. Jackson strode over to them, scooped up the turtle to examine it, and turned it over in his hands.
Look, Daphne, you don't have one like this. What a nice addition to your collection.
Jackson set the turtle down.
Great gift, Amber. Now how about we go to the dining room for some Christmas dinner?
Oh, wait, Amber said. I have a gift for you too, Jackson.
You really needn't have done this, he said, as he took the package she handed to him.
She watched as he removed the decorative paper and stared at the book in his hands. He looked up at Amber in surprise, and for the first time she felt he was really looking at her.
This is amazing. Where did you find it?
I've always been interested in the cave paintings. It's apparent that you and Daphne are discerning art lovers, so when I came across it on an antiquarian book site, I thought you might be interested in them too.
She'd searched the antiquarian bookstores online, and had finally found one she thought he'd appreciate, the Lascaux Cave Paintings by F. Windles. She'd gulped when she'd seen the $75 price, but decided to go ahead and make this her one splurge. The paintings were over 17,000 years old, and the French caves had been named a UNESCO World Heritage Site. She had hoped he would be impressed. Amber smiled to herself. She had definitely scored with this one. Daphne rose from the sofa.
Okay, everyone, time for dinner. Just a second.
One more thing. Amber handed her the box of cookies. Goodness, Amber, these look delicious. Look, girls, don't they look yummy?
I want one.
Bella stood on tiptoe and looked in the box. After dinner, sweetheart. Amber, this is so sweet of you.
Well, Rollins closed early yesterday, so I enjoyed baking them last evening.
What? You made these?
It's not a big deal. It was fun, really.
They walked into the dining room together, and suddenly Bella was by Amber's side. She took hold of Amber's hand and smiled up at her.
You're a really good cookie maker. I'm glad you came today.
Amber looked down at the little brat and smiled back.
Me too, Bella.
She felt a swell of satisfaction rise inside her. 16. Amber had a New Year plan that she hoped would ramp things up. Her panicked phone call had done the trick, and now Daphne waited for her as she walked to the door. A worried look crossed Daphne's face as she ushered Amber in. They went directly to the sunroom.
"What's happened?" Daphne asked with concern. "I've been trying to work this out on my own, but I just can't take it anymore. I have to talk to someone about it."
"Come, sit."
Daphne took Amber by the hand and led her to the sofa.
"Now, what is it?"
She leaned forward, her eyes focused on Amber's face. Amber took a deep breath.
"I was fired today, but it's not my fault, and I can't do anything about it."
She began to cry.
"What do you mean? Back up and tell me everything." "It started a few months ago. It seemed whenever I went into his office, my boss, Mark Jansen, would find some reason to touch me, brushing something off my shoulder or putting his hand on mine. At first I thought it was nothing, but then, last week, he asked if I would go with him on a client dinner."
Daphne was staring at her intently, and Amber wondered if she thought she was too homely to be hit on.
"Is it usual for you to attend client dinners?" Daphne asked.
Amber shrugged.
"Not really, but at the time, I was flattered. I figured he valued my opinion and wanted my input. And maybe, you know, there might be a promotion in the future. I drove myself and met him at Gilly's. He was already there, but he was alone. He told me the client had called and was running late. We had a couple of beers, and I started to feel funny."
She stopped again, taking a deep breath.
"The next thing I knew, his hand was on my knee and then moving up my thigh."
"What?" Daphne's voice exploded in anger. Amber wrapped her arms around herself and rocked back and forth.
"It was horrible, Daph. He slid closer to me in the booth and stuck his tongue in my mouth and started fondling my breast. I pushed him away and ran." "That pig. He won't get away with this."
Her eyes were blazing.
"You have to report him."
Amber shook her head.
"I can't."
"What do you mean, you can't?"
"The next day, he claimed I had hit on him. Told me no one would believe me."
"That's ridiculous. We're going to march right over there and talk to human resources."
"I'm so ashamed to tell you this, but at the office holiday party a few weeks ago, I had too many drinks and ended up kissing one of the agents. Everyone saw. They're going to believe him, believe that I'm loose."
"Still, that's not the same thing as your boss taking advantage of you."
"I can't make trouble. He offered me 2 months' pay if I leave quietly. My mother is still paying off Charlene's medical bills, and I send her money every month. I can't afford not to take it. I'll find something else. I'm just so humiliated."
"He's paying you off to shut you up. I can help you with money until you find another job. I think you should fight it." Now she was talking, but Amber had to up the ante and see the act through.
"And have every real estate firm in Connecticut afraid to hire me? No, I have to keep my mouth shut. Besides, maybe I did give him the wrong idea.
Daphne stood up, pacing. Don't you dare blame yourself. Of course you didn't do anything wrong. That piece of